Monster.
It's Wine. And this podcast may not be suitable for all ages.
The opinions we have in our podcast aren't necessarily the same of those of the Comic Bastards.
So blame us if things get too saucy.
Or too awesome.
Let's go!
Howdy, folks. It's Monster, and I'm joined by...
Wine!
As always, Ed, this might be our last episode for a minute. There's vacation going on. There's things happening, okay? So soak it up. Soak it in.
Get your fix.
Bathe in the entertainment.
Woohoo!
I was going to say the Everglow or the Afterglow. Wasn't that an Everclear song? Somewhere in the Afterglow or... Am I right? Am I on the right path here? Does anyone remember Everclear?
Does anyone remember
yes. Laughter?
Yeah, Everclear. Are they the Santa Monica song?
Yeah, that's right.
And then I get Everclear and Eve 6 confused somehow.
Yeah. They were both in that moment. So much for the Afterglow. Wow, and I just typed that up, and so much for the Afterglow tour, May 11th to July 1st. That's a thing, people.
Everclear's still going strong.
Eve 6 is still together, too. Original lineup.
Surprised by that.
It's happening. That's a bit of a thing these days, the revival of all these big 90s bands.
Oh, that's the age. Like, we're old now.
Yeah, it's a second... kind of burst, you know?
Nostalgia.
Yeah. You can't fuck with nostalgia. Except when it's Smash Mouth. And then you just say, no. No, you stay. You stay back where we left you.
I never heard another song, but I only heard All Star. I never heard another song.
Right.
Don't even know. It could be the great lost band. Our next podcast, whatever that is, could be me waxing poetically about the Smash Mouth record collection. Discography. Yeah, discography. Like, you know, Jason, there are some real gems in there.
Oh my God, a song of theirs that's not Smash Mouth just popped into my head.
What?
You might as well be walking on the sun.
That was Smash Mouth?
Yeah.
All right, then. I know two songs.
Yep. There you have it, folks. We're done.
No, we're not. Because that's the year we graduated. That's the summer of 98. You had that. There was a band called Fastball, and they had a big hit.
Yeah.
I forget, but it was very similar to the Smash Mouth. You had the semisonic closing time.
Oh, God.
You had some sort of... There was a Shania... I think Shania Twain, You're Still the One.
Semisonic, that song. Oh, my God. That was like in every commercial and TV show.
It was everywhere. It had the great music video that was in, quote, real time, split screen.
All the members doing different things. But yet connected.
Interesting fact. That song... is not about a bar closing. It's about either the singer or a friend of the singer about to like have a baby.
Oh, lame.
And it was like closing time.
Yeah, I was reminiscing about 90s music recently with someone, and we were talking about like SR-71. That was like a one-hit wonder band.
I don't know them. I know the right I know the now. Plane.
What was we it? Cut out people. We cut out people. We're still here. Don't worry. We're not under attack.
You cut out. We stayed here.
Oh, you cut out on me. Cut out on you.
What was the SR-71 song? Because I said I only know the plane, the Blackbird.
Right, it's called Right Now. And it was very much trying to cash in on the huge pop punk movement of the early 2000s. Mm. But then you found out that none of the rest of the music really sounded like that. It was just very much, like I said, they were trying to cash in on a moment. And the song was very heavily reliant on palm muting.
Mm.
Like, that kind of bullshit, uh-huh. If you don't know what palm muting is.
Well, that's pop punk to me. No offense.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They were trying to get in on that train because there was a big movement at the time with Blink and Green Day and all that shit.
Yeah, that's very 90s.
She clings to me like cellophane with a big butthole voice. What else? Weedus. Remember Weedus?
Weedus. It sounds familiar.
Their big single. Their only single.
Is that the high school song?
It was called Loser or something.
Well, Beck had Loser.
No. It was called Teenage Dirtbag.
Oh, yeah, but I'm a teenage dirtbag.
With a really high pitch. Because I'm just a teenage dirtbag, baby.
You know what's really sad about this? Is that if you live in Los Angeles, you can pretty much just relive the 90s by turning on K-Rock. Which I guess is unfair because I haven't listened to K-Rock in probably like 2 years. But when I did, I didn't know about these songs when they came out in the 90s. I heard them like 2 years ago listening to K-Rock.
K-Rock, get with it. The fucking Weenie Roast is pretty much all these bands.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They would just always play like all those bands. Like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Sublime. That's why I got tired of it, because I was like, I'm not a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. I'm like, I'm not a big Sublime. The only songs of all of those bands that I somewhat enjoyed were the songs that they played over and over again, and I'm like, no, that's it, I'm done. I can't.
Sublime is one of my most hated bands. And I'm just like, I've never seen the level of popularity for a band based on one album, but they actually have a big-ass discography.
Wait, so they, because I don't know really about, full confession, in the 90s, I was listening to the oldies. So, like, the music that I listened to in the 90s, I was listening to the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. I was listening to the oldies radio channel. So, Monday's Motown Monday. That's when I was all about Bobby Darin. I went through a big Bobby Darin phase. So, it wasn't until, like, after college that I was kind of, and was listening, like, you know, to K-Rock, that I was like, oh, what's this song? Oh, what's this song? Oh, they were big. So I have like this revisionist thing of the 90s that's kind of weird. So go ahead.
No, just fuck Sublime. I've never seen such a following for a band where people just suck the nuts of one album from 1996 because it had that song, Santeria.
They only have one album?
No, that's what I'm saying. They've been having an album since 91 all the way to 2013, but people still
I know that they
don't know the discography of these fuckers.
Well, I know that the lead, whoever, the singer, I have a feel just from what I've pieced together, is that the lead singer and sort of force behind the band died.
In 96,
died. And so I didn't realize that it's just the one CD. Because I know that they got it like a few years ago, maybe. Which isn't a few years ago. It's the old people's version of a few years ago. So it was probably like 12 years ago. But a few years ago, they got a new singer. Because now they're Sublime with Rome.
Yeah, well, that's like thing. Nobody gave a fuck about him after 1996, that one album, but people still
California loves them.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think that God. Just God. Whenever I see Sublime or hear Sublime. Just, ugh. Ugh. But whatever. The music, huh? Music. Fuck, what can I say?
Oh, man.
You know, speaking of the past and the 90s.
Ooh.
This is a beautiful segue. Myself. I watched the pilot of Twin Peaks today.
You know.
Now, this came out in 1990 on the dot. April 8th, 1990 is when it premiered.
Jesus.
So, yeah.
This is one of those shows. I remember 1990, I was in Germany. I'm not sure how my parents got to see it. It had to be some sort of delay. I'm going to have to ask them about this because I remember being in Germany, but I remember not being able to watch it. I wasn't allowed to watch it. And the day after my parents watched it, they would always have these like conversations where you're like, what the hell? Where they're like laughing and talking about how weird it is, but they really enjoyed it. Like, it was basically they were having a water cooler conversation about the show that they kept saying how weird it was, but they loved it. But it was how just so weird it was. And whenever they would see people, they would be like, have you watched Twin Peaks? So I never, that's all I know about it is that it's a really weird show. And that for a time, my parents are like, that was a super weird show. But they liked it. They talked about it.
Well, I obviously didn't watch it at the time either. We were 10 years old, and definitely I wouldn't say it's a show for kids. And even if a kid did watch it, they would just be like, I'm bored, or what the fuck's going on? So I know that this is a show that has quite a cult following. I mean, come on, so much so that Showtime brought it back for a limited third season run to wrap things up. So, I mean, that's pretty powerful in and of itself, I reckon. And that was really what kind of sparked my interest, I guess, to go back and try and check this show out, because I thought, well, I've always heard, Twin Peaks is kind of a out there show. It has a reputation for being very weird and kind of oddball, and it has this huge cult following, and all of that stuff kind of intrigues me. And the fact that they brought it back was what kind of made me say, okay, all right, let's see what the fuck is going on here. So I'm watching this and I'm trying to watch it both in the now, yet also trying to view it from the perspective of 1990 and what audiences then must have been thinking and like how they were processing this, because it was obviously a very different time for television. Nowadays weird shows are a dime a dozen. American Gods, I'm looking at you.
I don't know, though, man. Like, when I was watching American Gods, I was wondering, like, is this what Twin Peaks is like?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying nowadays you can turn on any network and they have a weird show of their own.
Okay.
And I'm saying, like, is Twin Peaks a weird show in comparison, or was it just weird for 1990? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So I watch it with these things in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I made notes in my phone, as I do. First episode, by the way, is an hour and a half. So they must have had some faith in it back in the day on ABC. They were like, boom, we're going to give you a
big
night. Huh?
For some reason, I thought it would be like CBS.
That was ABC.
Interesting. Yeah.
So they must have had some faith in it. They were like, yo, let's give you a big 90-minute premiere. Booyakasha. I'll tell you right off the bat, things that I really liked just from the pilot. I liked the music, oddly enough, like, I don't know that everyone would, because some people might have found it kind of cheesy or melodramatic, but I think that's kind of, it kind of works. I also think the look of the show, it does have this kind of eerie vibe to it, which is probably appropriate, but I like the feel of it. Now, it's the performances that have me a little puzzled as I'm watching it. There's a few faces that I recognize just as well-known actors today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Laura Palmer's father, for instance. I can't tell. Well, I mean, it's intentionally campy. I don't know yet because I'm just watching the pilot, and I honestly have never done any kind of reading or research about this show.
Like, have you seen any of David Lynch's other films?
I don't even know, like, what's something he's done. Like, I don't know his career at all.
Oh, he did Blue Velvet, which I haven't seen. He did Mulholland Drive,
which never seen it.
I saw, but I don't really remember. I'm sure he's done others, but I'm not a big, like, oh, that's, you know.
I'm taking a look at some of his work just real quick, folks. Yeah, all I know is that his reputation kind of precedes him because I don't really know his work, but everyone just kind of says that he's different and kind of out there and looks at things a bit differently in terms of his work. I'm looking at his feature films. I have not seen any of his films. Straight up. Eraserhead, Elephant Man, Dune, Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, Twin Peaks, Fire Walk with Me, Lost Highway, The Straight Story, Mulholland Drive, Inland Empire.
Oh, I think I did see The Straight Story. That's a documentary, yeah. Though.
Okay, so I'm unfamiliar with his work, but I know, like I said, he's kind of quirky.
Well, yeah, so, he's definitely got a thing going,
right?
And it's so, definitely in the weird
realm.
Yes.
So I knew that kind of going in, so I wasn't really thrown off by the quirky vibe of the pilot episode. I just thought, okay, this is his style. The acting is very disarming. I think some of the characters feel like they're intentionally overacting. That's just my vibe. It could either be some of these people were just starting as actors, but it really feels like it's intentional, which is fine, but it does add to the quirkiness of the show. All the characters, it's just like you would never meet anyone that acts that way in real life. So these are all, everyone's very much a character, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's interesting though. Yeah, everything just has a very over the top vibe to the performances. Yeah, but I definitely get this feeling like this show was AMC's The Killing of 1990. So, and that's a premise that's kind of instantly interesting for a viewer, I think.
Yeah, who killed Laura Palmer?
Exactly. And that who killed Rosie on The Killing. I mean, but The Killing was obviously a more straightforward cop drama mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And this definitely leans more into the God, even as they would describe it, a very much like unmatched tone for any kind of shows that kind of preceded it. Also working with different almost soap opera and horror vibe type of stuff going on. And that's what obviously sets it apart and probably what garnered such a cult following for it, because it was kind of this old tried and true storyline, but with a completely unique vision.
How many episodes were in each season?
There's only two seasons, not including, I mean, obviously the original run. Mm-hmm. Season one, I'm not from England, was only 8 episodes.
Oh, wow. For the 1990? Yeah.
I know, right?
It's pretty much a mini series then, back in those days.
Yeah, they didn't really do that back in the day, as far as I can remember. Season two, though, is 22 episodes.
Oh.
So, very different. I'm curious to see how tight the first season is with only 8 episodes. And then I'm curious to see how season two is. Like, if that feels like it's just dragging on because it is so many episodes.
I have a feeling that it also another similarity to The Killing in that really tight first couple of, I think the first season really good, and then kind of second season it's kind of tapers off.
Well, that could be part of why it was canceled after the second season.
It probably, I'm assuming,
has a lot of filler or a lot of slow pacing, things getting dragged out, because again, we're working with the same premise as The Killing, where we want to get to who killed this girl. And the longer you take me to get there, the filler better be really freaking interesting, because I'm not going to lose sight of the fact that I still want to know who killed her. Like, you're not going to make me forget that.
Yeah. Though it could be a case of maybe like, oh, the 90s just didn't get it. 1990, they just didn't get it. But this is actually pretty good.
Yeah, and I was kind of conflicted about it when I watched the first episode. I thought, now this is really weird and off kilter, especially for 1990. And it's so odd. It made me think, would it fly by today's TV standards? Or... like, I think that we'd put up with the weirdness of it today, but you know how networks are now. They don't have the patience for it.
Well, I think it would be like how it is now, though. I think it wouldn't be on network. It would be on Showtime.
Exactly. So I'm curious to see how season one is tightly, and then season two, how things kind of come to an end, basically, because we know that the show ended for 20 fucking years after the last episode of season two, which is a crazy thought. I don't know if they get anywhere close to figuring out who killed her.
Well, they do have the movie Fire Walk With Me.
Yeah. Like, I don't know when and where they figure out who killed her. Like, did they not get around to it in season two because they got prematurely canceled, or they assumed that they would get a season three? Did they do the movie because they were like, we got to answer this question so people don't kill us in real life? Or is this season three on Showtime tied in with Laura Palmer, or is it just fan service where people can see FBI agent Cooper, Kyle MacLachlan, back in action because obviously he's the star?
Great question. So
that's what I'm curious to see how it all unfolds, because that could totally be plausible. Like, they might have wrapped up the Laura Palmer shit a long time ago, but everyone was just like, ooh, I'd love to see Agent Cooper back at it. What happened to him? And what happened to these other memorable characters? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was my time. Oh, you know what? I'm just reading now. The Fire Walk With Me is a prequel to the series.
Oh.
It's about Laura Palmer before she was killed.
Hmm.
So that leads me to believe that the Showtime series probably has to do with Laura Palmer still. But then again, it can't, can it? Because is he haunted by her murder 25 years later, still trying to figure it out?
I don't know.
You know what? Here's what I'm going to guess right off the bat. They figure out who kills Laura Palmer by the end of season two. And the movie is just a prequel leading up to her death. Because the first episode of season one, they find a dead body on the beach. That's how the show starts. So I'm guessing the movie shows all the events leading up to her death.
Mm-hmm. So she apparently walked with fire.
Hey, you know, fire walk with me. That's in the first episode. He finds Detective Cooper, or Special Agent Cooper, finds this piece of paper in the dirt. And it just says, fire walk with me, written on it. And he's like, huh? So, anyway... It's interesting enough to for me, it's definitely interesting enough to keep it going, see what's doing.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
How long did it take you to be like, okay, that's Special Agent Cooper, that's not the mayor of Portland?
I will be 100% honest with you. I didn't think of Portlandia once while watching it until you just said it.
All right.
Like, first episode, you don't even see Kyle MacLachlan until 40 minutes in. And it's such a different character from what he plays in Portlandia, just his overall vibe and his dialogue and everything. I don't know. I didn't even think of Portlandia once.
That's acting.
Hey, now. Interesting dialogue, though. Very interesting writing. David Lynch and this fucking Mark Frost fella. So, Twin Peaks, folks, check it out. 30 years later. Hey-o! Have you ever seen a show called The Carmichael Show?
Yes, but not as much as I want to.
All I know is it's created by a guy of the same name, I think, as Jared Carmichael.
I've seen a few episodes. It's always one of those shows that I always enjoy. I'm like, oh man, I should watch more of it.
I know it's got David Alan Greer in it. I enjoy him. I've never seen it, but it's the synopsis for those who don't know. Jared and his therapist and training girlfriend, Maxine, are intelligent, ambitious, and ready to take the next step to building a fulfilling life by moving in together. The one thing holding them back is Jared's lovable but spirited family. At home, he has a brother, Bobby, who has a big personality, which he uses in his endless string of hustles, his obstinate father, Joe, and his Jesus-praising mother, Cynthia. Together, the three of them test Jared and Maxine as they learn about romance, family, and trying to stay sane.
Yeah, that's pretty broad. It's more like, it's a traditional like sitcom with the three camera setup, but it's more in the vein of like All in the Family, where like they take on, you know, those issues.
Yeah, I've heard that it's very tackling major issues.
Yeah.
And that's what I brought it up for, because I saw something interesting in the news about it where NBC pulled an episode that it made about mass shootings.
Interesting.
Right. Because I was like, whoa, that's real topical.
Did they pull it because, like, oh, it was in the can and it was going to air like this week? And they're like, oh, we're going to kind of wait. Hopefully, not a mass shooting is going to happen because one happens every week, but hopefully it won't be like a big one that's on like the news and everyone knows about. And when that week comes, we'll just stick it in.
Well, let's dig into this. The Carmichael Show, an NBC sitcom that routinely tackles difficult subjects and social issues, was supposed to air an episode on the evening of June 14th that deals with the aftermath of a mass shooting. But earlier that day, very real mass shootings occurred in Alexandria, Virginia, and San Francisco. NBC ended up pulling the episode titled Shoot Upable in the wake of those episodes, or in the wake of the shooting, excuse me, and airing a completely unrelated one instead. A move that Carmichael Show creator Jared Carmichael says he understands, but vehemently disagrees with.
I understand because people would get their underwear in a bunch, but at the same, like, I understand that NBC's like, no, we can't air it because it hits a little too close to home. But at the same time, though, I mean, in a way, isn't it kind of perfect? Like, this thing just happened. Every mass shooting is horrible. Like, every time that it happens, the same things get said. So what is being said in the show, I don't think is going to be like, oh my, you know, it's not going to have any more. I don't know. I kind of wonder what that would have been like if, like, oh, the Carmichael Show had talked about mass shooting and I got to watch it that night.
Well, he brought up the decision himself to express his disappointment that it wouldn't air at the exact time when he feels it could have been the most helpful.
Yes, that's my roundabout. That's what I was trying to say.
He said, quote, I thought that the episode would have an opportunity to talk about these tragedies in a meaningful way, to really lend itself to conversation. A lot of times when things like this happen and someone wants to talk about it in an outlet that's not the news, people will say, too soon. But when is it not too soon? Unfortunately, these things happen constantly, and it's a thing that breaks all of our hearts. Shoot Upable doesn't depict a mass shooting, but instead focuses on the complicated feelings that Carmichael's character grapples with after having survived. When something like this happens, we realize that we all suffer from fear of going out, fear of enjoying your life. We all suffer from the pain of knowing that families have lost loved ones, and that's what this episode is all about. And while Carmichael insisted during his Chelsea appearance, I hate her, that he does understand the thinking behind NBC's decision, he also argued that the network did a disservice to its viewers. What it says is that you don't think America's smart enough to handle real dialogue and something that reflects real family conversations and something that feels honest and true and still respects the victims. We handled the episode with as much love and integrity as we could, and to pull it feels criminal. It does a disservice to the viewer. It does a disservice to you. It does a disservice to all of us. So,
there you have it. I get it, but I think America is dumb. And you know what? They should have put it up on, like, on demand or online.
Yeah. That would have been a good alternative, I think.
Especially if it's an episode, and I've seen the show, and it's, you know, the thing that I like about the show is that it's all these different points of view, all within this family, and they do have a dialogue, and they do, like, oh, okay, like, they're not just yelling at each other, and there is comedy in there, so. I would have liked to, if I had known that, I probably would have gone and sought it out to see, because it's like, okay, let me sort through this, watching these people sort through this.
Yeah, and it's all good points. He makes great points, but, you know, you can't win, you know? Like, if they were to air it, NBC would get enough people crying foul, or how could you, that it would just get him in trouble, and it's a whole thing.
Yeah,
you know how that shit goes.
Every yeah, time and anything. It's just dumb, because then it's just like, well, don't watch it. Like, you know? You don't want to see the sitcom about somebody in the mass shooting because you're like, ooh, it cuts a little too close to the bone. Then guess what? Don't watch it.
Yeah, treat it like you would a program showing tits and ass. If you're watching it with your mother, you wouldn't watch that with her.
Or like September 11th. I don't need a reminder. So on September 11th, I don't watch any of those commemorative things. But I don't get mad because I'm like, how dare you show all of these things? I just don't watch it.
My point is, there's so much content.
So much content?
You're going to agree with all. Yeah. There's no way you're going to agree with all of it. And how you deal with it is you choose to watch what you want to watch. You don't find things to complain about.
But that's what
I know, that's the American way. But you find what you want to watch, because if you don't want to see it, there's probably a good handful of people that would want to watch that. So, you know, what are we saying there? So, I don't know. It's this weird thing that these networks do, where they feel like they're like this morally superior entity, and that they have your best interests in mind.
No.
When really, they don't really give a fuck about it. They just don't want to catch any heat.
They don't want to lose advertising dollars.
That's what I'm saying. They don't want to catch any heat for it. They don't have, you know. Otherwise, they wouldn't give a fuck about airing it.
Because basically, they don't want to be like, oh, Toyota pulled their ad.
Because people complained.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what it's all about now. We just don't want the advertisers to bail.
Well, what do we always say? It's all about the money, right?
Cash rules everything around me.
You're darn right. So that's what it all boils down to, Mr. Carmichael. I understand your disappointment with their decision, but they're looking out for their bottom line.
Yeah.
And their bottom line is affected by people that complain.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they're in network TV, and it's a sketchy time now because, you know, networks.
Sea sucking sons of bees.
Yeah. They gotta, like you said, there's so much content. They gotta compete.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought it was an interesting headline. Another thing that happened this past week was E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Oh,
it happens every year, and
does it happen just once a year? Because it feels like
it happens just once a year.
Huh? Are we sure about that?
We are. At least I am. It's the big gaming expo. All the big boys, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, they have their big conference presentation that they do. Everyone waits with bated breath to see what will be unveiled or what will be examined in greater depth. Of course, I, as a gamer, always look forward to the E3 to see what the companies are bringing to the table. I'm particularly interested in the Sony press conference because it's the only console that I have, PS4. I will say this. I was disappointed with Sony's presentation. I felt it was very underwhelming. Would be a great word for it. They unveiled nothing new. Everything that they showed at their conference was games that we already knew about. They just showed more of them. So I was kind of bummed out about that. I mean, it really felt like they just showed off 5 games or so. It was bizarre. I was like man, that's it? Some of these games are pretty fucking legit, but yeah, it was very underwhelming because it was like everyone's stoked for God of War, this game, and they just showed an extended trailer and more footage from God of War, and I was like, okay, but I was already on board from 2016, but okay, thanks for more, I guess. Spider-Man was a big game for Sony, PlayStation exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just called Marvel Spider-Man. And yeah, it looks fucking awesome. It was their big climax present game at the end of their presentation. They closed with Spider-Man, which shocked me, quite frankly. But it looks really good. But they showed a bit of it in 2016. So, okay. Yeah, that was Sony. Okay, bummer. I thought it was a really underwhelming, kind of a shitty presentation for Sony. Xbox, Microsoft probably had the best showing at E3 this year because they unveiled a fucking brand new console.
What?
Yeah, it's the basically the Xbox One on steroids.
What are they calling it?
Did you hear that?
No, what are they calling it?
The Xbox One X.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of X in there. It's, you know, it's a console that they had been hinting at for a year or so, calling it Project Scorpio. Official name is Xbox One X. It goes on sale November 7th. It's going to be $500. Whew.
Damn. $500?
Yeah. It's pretty hardcore, right? Original Xbox games will be backwards compatible with the Xbox One, which is great. You know, it fucking better be, right? You don't want to have
for
a whole library
of games. Yeah.
Worthless now. It talked about a couple of games, obviously, that are going to launch for it. But it's a 4K console, which is obviously its big selling point. It's got like the best specs of any console. It's got a 6 teraflop GPU.
I don't know what that
means. And I don't even know what that means. 12 gigs GDDR5 memory. I just shrugged my shoulders. And 326 gigs of memory bandwidth. Goodness.
Okay.
So I see a bunch of numbers, but they're saying it is the most remarkable in terms of specs of any console. And, you know, I always take that as, okay, but the console, the power of a console is only as good as what the developers can do with it.
Right, the games.
Yeah, they have to be able to work with the capabilities of Gene in order to, quote unquote, tap into the potential of the console. So the specs look good on paper, and they look good when you're selling it to a crowd of nerds at a fucking auditorium. But I always take it with a grain of salt because I'm like, yeah, those are impressive specs, but am I going to really see these major differences? Are the developers ready for that? It's all new hardware that they're working with. Ah, Nintendo. Nintendo. They're... I tell you what, they are that... I've used this analogy before where I'm the battered wife. My favorite analogy, quite frankly. And Nintendo beats me, and I make excuses for it because I keep going back to it to see what they're up to. I can't help it. I have yet to completely write them off. I fucking despise their business practices, but there's a part of my heart that loves the original IPs they've come up with, like Mario and Zelda and Star Fox. I love, and Metroid. I love those franchises. I want to play those franchises. I couldn't get a Nintendo Switch if my life depended on it. Not that I would, because there's only one fucking game on it that I want to play. This is my thing. They put out a console. You pay out the ass for it. You cut people's throats in the parking lot to get to it because they don't make enough of them. And then you're left with like 5 games to choose from, 2 of which are probably good. And then they just trickle games out throughout the year, like one game in October, one game at the end of December, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, they just, this drip feed. It's such, God, I just want to choke these fuckers. But again, I keep going back to them because I'm like, oh, is there a new Metroid game? I want to see what this new Mario looks like. I can't help myself.
So what did they come up with?
Well, the big thing, a big chunk of their presentation was showing off Super Mario Odyssey. They teased it last year at 2016's E3 by giving you a bit of a trailer and just showing you a bunch of fancy cuts, and you're just like, whoa, new Mario. Oh, my eyes. You know, I'm tantalized. But this time they actually showed gameplay, and they showed a lot of it, quite frankly, and they gave a release date, October 27th. So everybody was stoked on that. A lot of it was Super Mario Odyssey, which I get. It's their flagship character. And even for a guy like me who's angry at Nintendo most of the time, it looks really fun. I was like, oh, this looks like a really good Mario game. It kind of has the feel of Mario 64 back in the Nintendo 64 days. That big 3D world. And it looks like you can just do a ton of shit. And they're already crying foul, like racism, cultural appropriation, all this bullshit for Mario. Because there's like this Latin America themed level. I don't know. Mario's in a fucking sombrero and a poncho. And he's playing a little guitar. And I'm like, what's wrong with that? Like, isn't that what they wear when they're just partying? It's just an outfit, right? That outfit fucking exists. I don't speak in broken Spanish or something, or doing all these other stereotypes that people seem to have. It's an outfit in Mexico. And the guy that created the fucking game said he was inspired to create this level because of, he took a vacation to Mexico and he thought it was beautiful and he wanted to incorporate all these aspects of Mexican culture into this area, into the stage of Super Mario. So, you know, you can't do anything right in 2017 is what I'm saying with people, because I see nothing wrong with it. He's just wearing a little poncho and he's got a little sombrero on, and you know, there's little cactuses and things like that. It's just inspiration. That's all it is. Anyway, people suck. So Mario is a big thing. But the huge reveal was Metroid 4 or Metroid Prime 4. But all they gave you was a title screen.
That's it?
And it said development. A bullshit reveal, but it was enough to get people frothing at the mouth, because that is the power of Nintendo's franchises. People fucking love them. They will ride and die by Metroid and Mario and Zelda. So it was enough, even though all it said was Metroid 4 currently in development. Because, God, if I think about it, Metroid Prime 3, it's been a minute since there's been an all-new Metroid game. Like, they've had remakes and shit of, like, older Metroids, but, like, all-new? It hasn't been since 2007.
Damn.
Yeah, so they sit on shit for a while. So that was Nintendo's big kind of reveals. And, you know, some expansion content for Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And the guy that created Pokemon, or the Pokemon universe, he was saying that there was a new original Pokemon role-playing game in the works for the Nintendo Switch. But that was it. That's all he said. There was no pictures. There was nothing. He just said, we're working on it. Fuck off. I was like, yeah, that's Nintendo for you. They can get away with that shit. But nowhere. That's the thing. They're so powerful that they can grab gamers by their pecker and swing them around, and the gamers will just say more, please. We'll never be mad at you. So that's the power of Nintendo. And from this game
to what game?
E3. Said from my perspective, it was just a very meh E3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mediocre.
Well, eh.
Yeah. Nothing tickled my butthole with a feather. But whatever. Whew, anything you want to... thank you for indulging my E3 wrap-up.
No. I saw Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, which I'm going to ask you not to review since I'd like to see it, but what were your thoughts anyway?
I had a great time at the movies.
A great time at the movies.
It's a great time at the show.
Which is interesting because you're not into comic book movies. So what was it that made you want to see it? Was it all the hoopla surrounding it?
Yeah, I guess it was all.
You told me that you're sick of it.
Yeah, I'm not. It wasn't into comic book movies. I remember when it was announced that she was playing Wonder Woman, and the some people were up in arms, and I was just like, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, Wonder Woman was a very low bar for me and stuff. And then, I mean, I do think that the best part of the Batman versus Superman was when she just showed up. And had her, like, theme music going, and I was like, okay. And then I what made me want to see it was just because I had heard that it was actually decent, like, better than decent. I had heard that it was good. And I really like Chris Pine.
And oh, then, yeah, I forgot he was in it.
And, it had a female director. And people were saying, like, yeah, she's, like a pretty good Wonder Woman. I saw, like, clips of it, and I was like, all right, this might seem kind of cool.
Knowing what I know about you, if I may, you're a big supporter of the underdog.
Well,
and I'm not saying that this is an underdog from the start, but it has been under fire since its announcement, and it's been very controversial in different ways, if you want to say controversial, not to me, but it has been. And I think you're the type to, you would go see this when otherwise it probably wouldn't interest you, as just kind of like this way of showing support.
Yeah, exactly.
For the fight.
Like my everything is ruled by money. So if I hear about something, if I hear about like a company and they have a stance that I don't really agree with, it depends, like, well, how much do I not agree with? Like when it comes to my entertainment, and especially like what I watch on TV, and really especially movies, because I don't really go to the movies that much anymore. But because there's other ways to watch movies. You just wait for it to be on Netflix and stuff. Most of the time I just wait for it to be on Netflix. But when it's a movie that, like, if it had gotten crappy reviews, I probably wouldn't have gone to see it. But since people were like, no, this is actually like a pretty good movie, then I'm like, all right, I'm going to go. I'm going to give my money. I'm going to spend my money to support this. Because I, like, how else? That's the only thing that moves the needle is your money. So if you want something to change, like, especially with movies, if you want to see more, like, women directors or writers, or even, like, stories where it's, you know, just the way that are portraying women in the way that they are in the real world, like, why? And it's good, and it proves, and I'm like, I want to be a part of that. Same reason why, like, I spent money to watch Moonlight. I spent money to watch, you know, Birth of a Nation. Like, if there's movies that, especially those movies that people, that they, because they always use that, they always use money as as an excuse of like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't really sell and stuff like that. But it's like, and there's a lot of times where it's like crappy. Like I never saw Elektra.
Oh God.
You know? I didn't see Catwoman.
But I almost want to yell at you for reminding me those movies exist.
Right? Exactly. Because it's like this is bullshit. But like something where people actually were like, actually, like, it's actually pretty legit. And then I'm like, all right. Then I was kind of like excited. Because I don't, like, as a kid, I had the Wonder Woman doll. Like, we talked about it before in a previous episode. But I had no allegiance to Wonder Woman. I always wanted to be Batman. So, like, I was like, oh, but now it's kind of cool that, like, now, you know, you have, like, there was this little girl who was in the theater, and I saw her when she was walking out. She had the little Wonder Woman cape on and stuff. And she was maybe, like, 7. It's like, that's kind of cool. And when I was walking out, there was a whole bunch of, like, boys who were probably, like 10, 11, 12, 13, waiting to go see it. Like, what is, how is that wrong? Like, how am I not going to support that?
Because Wonder Woman's fucking hot. I told you, that movie's got something for everyone.
It does, but it isn't, it's like, she is hot. She is extremely beautiful, but it's also, like, the movie also does, like, she's also really strong, and she also does, cool. like, really good, there's good action sequences and fight. It's not like, you know, like, oh, my nail or whatever.
Yeah, look, I'm saying I can appreciate that. I would love for her to take care of me. You know what I mean? Just like physically, emotionally, just fucking let me walk with you, okay? Look who I'm walking with, people.
Look who I'm walking with.
And then someone attacks us and she beats him up. I'll be like, thank you, honey. You're fucking amazing.
But I do have questions now about Wonder Woman and the Wonder Woman universe. So I have to wait for...
Dude, that's Dustin.
Yeah, well, I have to wait for him to see it.
I don't even know if he'd need to. He'd probably tell you anything about her. No,
because I asked him and I was like, I have questions about Wonder Woman. And he was like, well... You're going to probably have to wait until I see the movie because there's so many different origin stories.
Yeah, comic. I mean, okay, that makes sense.
So he has to kind of know. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm not going to like spoil it for him and stuff. Even though I think I have like the literal questions in my head. Of, like when you see it, and you like talk about it, then I'll point out my whole like, okay, so does that, like, what? But I think that's just the problem with comic books in general.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy shit going on in comic book movies and comic books and everything. You're just like, I don't know what the fuck's going on here.
But yeah.
Who cares?
But it's always interesting when they take things that really happened.
Oh, and trying to incorporate it into a fantasy world?
Yeah, because then you're... I can't really... Because then you're just like, well?
Well, that's fun with the comic books, too. Like, they kind of rewrite history for the sake of a storyline and something. It's fun to explore alternate universes is what they tend to let it fall under. Or alternate timelines, they'll call it.
Yeah.
Where things just unfolded differently. That's what's kind of fun about reading comic books in general, I think.
And but, I'm sure that this is, you know, it's setting up all these different, you know, this was the first one. And so they have set it up where, you know, I mean, there's going to be more.
Oh, fucking of course. I would guess so. I mean, look, you got that interesting Red Sun series with Superman, where he didn't land in Kansas in this alternate timeline. He landed in Soviet Russia.
Well, that's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, and he became a soldier for the Ruskies. He had, like, the sickle and hammer, I think, on his chest or something crazy like that, or on his cape or something. But... it's fun to when they do that kind of shit. Oh, comics. I can't keep up with you. There's too many of them, and I don't have the patience for the filler that they chump out. Not for the prices. Sometimes it's like $4 for a comic now, and you'll get to an issue that's just straight up filler. Like 800, like 8 pages will be ads, and you'll be like, fuck this.
I wonder if the paper industry. Well, probably not. I was thinking, I wonder if people are rather like, I'll just wait to see the movie. But I guess not, because like you say, all these different stories and the art.
Right. Like, now it's like, if they make a movie of something, now you question, like, well, which origin story or which timeline are they going to make a movie of from this character?
Yeah, that's exactly what Dustin's point was. He was like, I can't really answer your question until I see kind of what they're coming from.
Yeah, the only time you can really kind of pinpoint something like that is if they're making a movie off of a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And it's just that one thing or that one specific storyline in a character's series. And they're like, we're going to make a movie off of that storyline because the story is fucking awesome. So... I want to see a Russian Superman on screen. Anyway, we're going to wrap this fucker up, folks. Like we said, we don't know when we'll get around to doing the next episode, but hopefully sooner rather than later. That's all I'll leave you with. Plugs per usual, monsterandwine@gmail.com, mnw.podbean.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. TV.com, and as always, meaning this is a new thing, brand new Andy Mac tonight on the Disney Channel.
I'm excited.